With Bitcoin making some strong moves in the digital markets as I speak, you'll definitely want to hear what our next guest has to say. Here with us is Vortex, a renowned cryptocurrency evangelist who has been in the blockchain space since 2012. He's also a developer, educator, and the founder of the CryptoCast Network YouTube channel. As you'll recall, it was right here last September that Vortex called the bull market that we're seeing right now. From 6,000 to 7,000 in a week to 7,000 to 8,000 in a day, Bitcoin is on a tear. Best of all, Vortex has an updated analysis and forecast that will blow you away. Please go to crushthestreet.com/crypto. Remember, the last time we saw Bitcoin act this way, it shot up to nearly $20,000 a pop. You don't want to miss out on this critical info at crushthestreet.com/crypto. So let's get right to it with Vortex.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. What an exciting time to be discussing crypto. You know, we've been fortunate to be covering this now for years and not stopping during the bear market. And I have a returning guest on the line, Vortex. He's a Bitcoin evangelist, a speaker, and someone who's also been in the space since 2012. He's a developer, educator, content creator, and founder of the CryptoCast Network YouTube channel covering Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And he's actually someone who was on the show, I mean, a number of times, but last September, he basically called this uptrend, this bull market that we're going into now, that we're seeing here in May of 2019. So it's a really exciting time. You know, $8,000 Bitcoin, $200 plus Ethereum, Litecoin, $90. I mean, the charts are in the green, and it's a pretty exciting week and last month that we're seeing in crypto. And the mainstream media is starting to scratch their head once again. Everyone thought it was dead, right? But here we are. Without any further ado, Vortex, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Ken. I really appreciate the intro. Really, I always appreciate the invitation, of course, to be on your show. You got a lot of investors, I think, that are really starting to get more and more interested in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. You know, so I think the FOMO is maybe starting to come in a little bit. So I'm happy to talk to your audience about Bitcoin.
Well, again, it's an exciting time. You know, are we seeing an exuberant market? Is it just the beginning? I mean, all these questions are coming into the space. And Bitcoin is doing what Bitcoin does best, and it's just surprising people. And we saw that move from 6,000 to 7,000, you know, last week. It happened in a week, and that was the first time since 2017 that we saw a 1,000-point move in Bitcoin. And then we had the 7,000 to 8,000, which happened in like a day. So, I mean, this is starting to get really fast here. You know, is Bitcoin kind of getting out in front of its skis, per se?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. If you look back at the history of Bitcoin, I think Tom Lee from Fundstrat did this analysis where you could see that Bitcoin actually makes most of its gains on an annual basis within the span of 10 days. So within, you know, that's pretty much the move. So you essentially got to be really quick with Bitcoin when it comes to its gains. It really does tend to make most of its gains in a very short amount of time. So seeing it doing it again is really not very surprising to those of us who have been here in the space for a while. And as you said on your show and in the intro, I really did predict this particular rally in the summer. So last September, we were talking about where are we in the bear market? And what I pretty much said is that we were about halfway through. And so we were going to have another rally either that fall or this summer, because essentially this is when Bitcoin gains. If you look back at the cycles do continue to repeat. And so now we find ourselves out of the bear market and in an accumulation phase. Now, me personally, I won't officially declare a bull market until we have at least a couple of weeks of sustained gains above that 120-week moving average, which is what I've been trying to tell people and let everybody know on various podcasts and show that various podcasts and TV shows and things that that the 120-week moving average is the most important indicator I think that I pay attention to is so when we can break that 120-week moving average and sustain that, then we will absolutely, just like every other previous time in Bitcoin's history, be in a bull market. But we see all of this, we see this I don't think that the exuberance for Bitcoin for the people in the space ever went away, right? So the price went down, but nobody ever stopped believing, per se, in the actual space, because we have players like Fidelity, right? We have all of these big institutional players that are starting to come in here and start to launch products. So, you know, backed from the New York Stock Exchange, and then TD Ameritrade, and on it goes. There's more of these institutional people that are realizing that Bitcoin's not going away. They see this continuous gains, and so they want to be a part of that. And of course, their investors are demanding this, right, of them, right? So I think with Bitcoin continually taking the headlines, you know, year after year after year, whether that's good or bad, that has made people pay attention. And so now there's all of these people now that are looking at the price every day. I think you even mentioned yourself now that we're starting to, now that the market's back, we're gonna start looking at the price more and more. But really, the eyeballs have never left Bitcoin's price. And it actually is the most watched, you know, asset class on the planet. So because it is the most accessible asset on the planet. So it makes sense for that. But again, you know, with all of this institutional investment, then you have the things on the side, like the trade war happening with, you know, with Trump and China, and people are getting a little bit nervous. You know, even this morning, I believe Anthony Pompliano, we call him Pomp for short, Anthony Pomp, he's the founder at Morgan Creek over there. He was teaching Kevin O'Leary a little bit about Bitcoin this morning on TV. And he was trying to tell them that, like, look, if what gives asset classes belief at the end of the day, or value at the end of the day, is just belief, right? If you believe that the dollar has value, or if you believe that gold or Bitcoin has value, and somebody else believes it has value, well, then it's going to actually have value. So for years, year after year, we see that people are assigning value to Bitcoin, and that because it is a limited finite supply, that the value does go up. So if you believe, you know, in digital scarcity, if you believe in digital assets, then you can absolutely see why Bitcoin continues to make these gains and is still very early days. As I said in your last show, I'm still expecting a parabolic blow off somewhere between the fall of 2021 at the latest. And that's going to take us well over 100,000.
That's epic, to say the least. And I'm very excited to obviously be a part of it. I know a lot of the audiences as well. So yesterday, we were on Twitter, and we see Omar Bam of Crypto's News, a favorite in the crypto community, and he pointed out in a tweet, and I'll quote, "Crypto rallies as stocks disappoint. Apple enters correction territory as Bitcoin soars 14%. Times are a-changing." And then, of course, you know, we see the Dow Jones down big time, and cryptocurrencies are up. I mean, what's going on underneath the surface? Do you see something changing, as he points out, that is shifting the way the world is going to invest their money on a global scale that was different from, you know, say 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Yeah, so I think really at the end of the day, the millennials have spoken, right? We have digitized everything in our life. We have digitized everything down to the clothes that we want to wear with video games, you know, our magazines, our content, our video content, everything is at this point digital. So if you're a millennial and you've grown up with nothing but digital, then of course that's what you're going to value and that's what you're going to believe in. So if you look at it from like a millennial's point of view, if Bitcoin was around for more than half of your life, then you're going to think that thing is pretty stable. That thing is good to go. You're going to have a lot more faith and belief in it. Now, if you're an older investor, you know, and you've been around for many decades, right? And Bitcoin's just this little blip on your, you know, in your lifespan. You're like, well, I'm not going to fully trust that yet. But this is what we see. We see Bitcoin continuously staying around, being continuously resilient, fighting off attacks. And the millennials, these younger people are now seeing this. And they are really essentially, at this point, Bitcoin has become the millennials' retirement account. And so they have so much more trust in these open source projects like Bitcoin than they do in the traditional institutions. And if you look, trust is on the low for everything, right? For media, for government, for Wall Street, for financial institutions, and just institutions in general. And so the millennials and the younger generation are screaming for something better. And at this point, they actually possess the technology to make something better for the world. And this is what is really represented in Bitcoin's, you know, free open source development ethos, is that the ability for anybody to, no matter where you are, no matter how old you are, no matter where you come from, to be able to come and make a contribution to this internet of money. And that is really, again, what's driving this value, is that everybody is believing that this is the new thing. This is how we're going to transact in the future. And it's really, at the end of the day, if you look at monetary economics, you can sort of see that we pretty much change have a global shift in monetary policy every 50 years or so. And that's going to continue here as we see. Bitcoin will be this next paradigm shift, this next wealth transfer into a new age. And so if you start to think about it like that, and you start to think of the long game, because I kind of live on the macro level, that's kind of where I like to live and breathe, you can really start to see how this is going to play out. And remember what we've seen just recently. I mean, Bitcoin has been the best performing asset year over year for almost year over year for the past 10 years, literally outperforming everything. The S&P 500, Berkshire Hathaway, of course, pretty much everything you can think of. And so what we see is that now BTC this year is beating the S&P 500 by a large margin. And we see some all-time highs on the CME, over 1.2 billion, I think, traded in a 24-hour period. We see this, we see the uptake, we see more and more people believing in it because they see, they start to compare it to the old systems. And when you start to compare it to the old systems just don't stack up. Now, it's easy to misunderstand this, when you look at the space from the outside as a new person, you see these thousands of currencies are like, what am I supposed to do? How is this all not crap? Where's the intrinsic value, right? But if you do your due diligence and you do your research, you will find that Bitcoin is the only actual open public blockchain at scale. It is the only actual decentralized open public blockchain at scale. Decentralized meaning that nobody can shut it down, right? Open meaning anybody can actually access it. And so this is kind of the future of what the millennials are demanding, a much more open and transparent society and way of living. And this, in my opinion, is really the three-step process. We get people believing in Bitcoin, right? And then we get people then we get the society moving away from central banks, and then we really start to separate money and state. And that is the big win, the overall big win that I'm looking for. That's why what gets me up in the morning is learning about these technologies that have the potential of world changing effects.
Yeah, that's very true. And so I'll bring us back to what April Fools, right? You know, where we had that joke about the SEC approving a Bitcoin ETF, which correlated with the price action. I'm not saying it was because that's why we saw the price action. And then here we are today with the price continuing to go up. And there's a lot of pundits, there's a lot of skeptics out there right now saying that the movements we're seeing is a pump and dump, it's a scam, it's not to be trusted. I mean, here we have consensus right now going on as we do this interview. There's even a Got Satoshi website out there, a lot of people are pointing at, which, obviously it seems like a scam. I mean, in the middle of this interview here, we're recording it. It's going to happen in like 30 minutes from now. So this is going to be old news by the time this is released. But, talk about this a little bit. Are you at all concerned that the price action we're seeing is misleading, is being manipulated, is a scam, is a pump and dump? Can you speak to that?
Sure. So there's a lot of confusion out there between market manipulation and, people not understanding what market makers are, right? So people need to understand that there are absolutely whales out there, but they have a job to do. They're not just out there like making money, easily and forever. They do have a job to do, and it is their job to sort of smooth out the market. And what happens is every once in a while, again, with Bitcoin, we have these big moves. See, Bitcoin, like I say, does the vast majority of its gains within a 10-day period in any given year. So what we see is this is just an actual organic nature of Bitcoin. It is fully global, fully decentralized, traded 24/7. And so what that means is that everybody is looking at the charts. Everybody is looking at when there could be a possible buy. And as I predicted last year, it had to have been either last fall or this summer. This is when people are going to start buying. And the reason for that, again, is because people want to make money. People are always going to want to make money. And so they're always going to figure out ways to do that. Now, that's going to be on the short side, right? And the bull side. So the long and the short side. But essentially, this plays out in the dynamics of the market. And we can see this. And it's eventually, people just stop selling. Eventually, people run out of coins. They run out of value to sell, and they wait for the price to gain. And this is what has happened. So there, as I spoke about, there was many billionaires and millionaires and many hedge fund managers and many intelligent people who can read charts just waiting, circling for that right time to buy. And really what we saw in April is the daily, the weekly, the monthly, the MCAD, just everything lining up and shifting towards ending the bull, ending the actual bear market. And so we were already in a good accumulation phase there for a few months, you know, from November to at least March there. Beautiful, almost perfectly sideways accumulation phase that ended up actually being a little bit shorter than the previous cycle. But so yeah, hopefully your audience got a chance to get in there because I was really absolutely advising everybody I could to dollar cost average in anything below 4,000. Like, it's a steal. Anything below 4,000 on Bitcoin, I mean, it is absolutely a steal. And now what we see is we're probably likely never, ever, ever to see prices below 3K again, just like we never will ever see prices below 1,200 again. So again, you know, Bitcoin makes these new bottoms every time. It continues to go. It is this never-ending cup and handle pattern that continues to go up. And, you know, its immutability was almost kind of proved just this last week. This last week with the Binance hack, you know, there was some talk of some reorg, and what happened was people figured out, oh yeah, just like we figured out the last few times that, because this comes up every time there's a big hack, just like we figured out last time, we can't really roll back the chain. We would, Bitcoin is too decentralized. There's not enough people that we could coordinate in this small time frame to be able to do such a thing. And so really Bitcoin's immutability and its properties of digital gold was renewed yet again. So, you know, I can see people continuously learning about this, but where we are right now is, remember, the cycle is the same that repeats. We have this big parabolic blow off. We have a big correction, sideways accumulation. Then we can stair step up into the next parabolic blow off. And where we are right now is we're just past the accumulation stage. And so now we are absolutely, you know, getting into the stage where we're going to start stair stepping up and then have that parabolic blow off. So where we are right now is, my predictions are between 5 and 10K. We're still going to kind of stay till the end of the year, because it's feeling very toppy right now. It is feeling very frothy right now. If you look at the MCAD and the RSI, we're a little bit toppy, and we can go all the way up to 92. Really, is the next kind of resistance, 9200. But we will correct after that. We let the market breathe a little while. But boy, next year the sparks are absolutely going to fly. Some of the largest institutional investors are launching products this year that by this time next year will have been almost fully proven in the marketplace and have the kinks worked out, the water run through the pipes, and to prove that this is a real new asset class and that you can build almost anything on top of it. There's all sorts of people building. I believe Jack Mallers is now building a mining derivative for miners so that they can be able to hedge their bets a little bit again. So there's just so much opportunity and in this new marketplace, in this new paradigm, this new digital frontier of, like, you can think of it almost as new digital real estate. This is digital scarcity playing out, and this is not going to stop or slow down anytime soon.
So that's exciting. I mean, honestly, what you're talking about coming down the road here next year, it's very exciting. And again, I think it's an interesting thing because, you know, as we were in that accumulation phase during that last bull market in the 2017 phase, I mean, we weren't getting that same sort of attention from the mainstream media, but people have this most recent experience of what happened in 2017 and go, okay, well, I guess crypto's not going away, you know, because I think a lot of people that, you know, were skeptics or negative or just were blowing it off. I mean, the Warren Buffetts of the world, who just calls it a gambling device with no intrinsic value, they were expecting it to just kind of fizzle off and go away. And I think the resilience of crypto and Bitcoin, for that matter, in this environment is a testament, and it solidifies itself deeper into the economic foundation of the world we live in. So, you know, how do you expect it to continue to evolve itself and become part of the financial institution that we have? And, you know, not so much our alternative media, you know, more liberty, freedom, you know, because, you know, in many ways, the people who think like us are pariahs in the mainstream media, right? You know, people who, you know, believe in liberty, believe in freedom, you know, monetary sovereignty, question the fiat currency system. You know, how do you expect this to continue to bridge itself in this current environment that we have today?
Sure. So I guess a big thing to mention here is that you can almost think of, you know, Bitcoin and crypto as the people's money, because we have absolutely been disenfranchised from in 2008, the young people, but almost everybody, you know, but the millennials especially, they simply just don't trust these banks anymore. So you're talking about like, you know, will people be able to trust Bitcoin and things? And I think that the millennials really have already spoken. The only people that are really talking smack about Bitcoin these days on mainstream media are these older type of previous generation people, right? And so, for example, like Warren Buffett, but even people like Jamie Dimon have already come around, right? He literally will say, I'm not saying anything about Bitcoin anymore. Like he won't even actually mention anything because every single quote kind of gets taken out of context because he has actual companies and investment in companies that are working on Bitcoin and blockchain related products. So I think it's important to understand too that this rally that we've seen, this recent rally, was not retail driven. It probably wasn't even institutional driven. This was just the crypto space, just people in the space seeing the charts and seeing a good time to buy. If you look at any type of blockchain conference these days, I mean, it's so endless. You can't even see the end of the hallways of all of these companies. So there is a massive amount of people in Bitcoin and crypto right now. So I think that this last pump was just the crypto people. We haven't even seen the retail. The retail investors most likely will not come back until we reach new all-time highs because that's what retail investors do. They're not that intelligent, right? They're the 80%. So they're going to probably not come back till new all-time highs. But this is just purely crypto driven. We simply have a huge influx of people from 2017 that we just didn't before. So we have a huge amount of people now in the space that we simply did not have in 2017. And as you say, you know, there is a few people that are still calling Bitcoin's death, but hey, Bitcoin has now died over 355 times on record. So there's been over 355 articles damning Bitcoin and telling everybody that it's going to go to zero, but Bitcoin doesn't go to zero. And part of that again is these network effects of what makes an actual distributed protocol grow. So, and this gets into technical things, but this is why it's difficult to understand. Bitcoin is you know, the medium, the interchange of all of these things: computer science, cryptography, distributed networks, economics, finance, and on and on and on it goes. And so it gets difficult to sort of to understand this, but what you can draw parallels to, of course, is the internet. The internet, it did grow eventually, grew exponentially, but it was kind of very stagnant for a while. And then what happened was that we invented a new protocol, HTTP, to ride on top of TCP/IP so that we can then build up the stack without actually breaking the underlying internet. So that's kind of where I see Lightning coming into play, is that Lightning is now the Bitcoin Lightning stack, the BTCLN stack is now coming into fruition, where people are starting to understand that, okay, so Bitcoin is IP, Lightning is TCP, so we're going to now build all of our applications and such on top of Lightning. That way we can build and exponentially grow without breaking the underlying protocol. You can make all the Lightning apps you want all day, and you will not break Bitcoin, I guarantee it. And so we're seeing people realize that in a few years we're going to start building up the stack. We're going to start building huge amounts of applications, which is going to go viral. And again, this is just makes sense because Bitcoin is faster, better, cheaper. And as it grow, as you go up the layers of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin stack, it gets even faster and even better and even more cheaper. Now, of course, there's trade-offs, usually in the form of security and privacy. But you eventually do get so much more utility. And another, as you go up the stack, just increasing amounts of utility. And I guess that the final thing would say is that all of this stuff is happening simultaneously, right? So Bitcoin is simultaneously using the network effect of financialization to build out these amazing products on Wall Street that's going to attract this institutional investor that can eventually create ETFs and options and so forth. So the average regular user can have their 401k in it. But then it's also servicing people in dark markets and people who can't get access to products, for example, even medicines that are across borders, that's servicing them. And then it's servicing people in remittance, right? That they're sending money home to their phone. Folks. Now, of course, the biggest use case for Bitcoin and crypto right now is, of course, speculation, right? That's the number one network effect that continues to drive the space. But that won't be like that forever. Eventually, we will build out the Internet of Money, because right now we are building the infrastructure, the underlying protocols, the bare metal that application developers by the millions can then come in later and build on top of, life-changing applications. So more and more people are getting red-pilled, I guess you could say, into realizing that digital scarcity is a thing. It's here. It's never going away. The idea is never going out of the box, so that even if Bitcoin dies, we'll build it out in another protocol. And that is really, really powerful stuff, because again, the genie is out of the box and people are starting to get it.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like you mentioned that speculation is a big part of it. I feel like the FOMO is setting in quicker this time around because people have that most recent experience of 2017 and what could happen with Bitcoin and crypto in general. And so what are your thoughts on that? And I also want to get into technical analysis, the importance of technical analysis, because you pointed out something and you reminded us that technical analysis is just human psychology. It's not just lines and stuff on a chart. It's real human psychology, and every serious trader in the world, especially those managing other people's money, are using technical analysis to support the work that they do. But yeah, touch on that a little more, and also touch on this idea that FOMO is setting in quicker because people are like, wait a minute, I don't want to miss out on what happened last time if it's about to happen again. And again, I wasn't even expecting it to move as fast as it did here. And here we are, $8,000 Bitcoin when it was $3,000 not too long ago. So take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole market is sort of readjusting their balances and their books and their bank sheets, 4 or 5 plus, and now an $8,000 Bitcoin. And it will incur some changes, and it does get some taking used to. Bitcoin is this new asset, but really, it's Bitcoin itself is not volatile. What's volatile is the rest of the world understanding Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin is this finite supply, right? So it is essentially designed to suck in value from everything, literally as much value as possible. That's its only goal, is to continuously gain more and more value, because as it gains value, it can gain utility and help more and more people. So I think that the FOMO might be getting a little bit quicker. Mentioned earlier, this accumulation phase was shorter by about a couple of months, at least, in the previous accumulation phase. We didn't really jump back up, you know, last time for a good year. We sat on the floor for a good year, and this time we only sat there for about, 6 months or so, maybe 7 months. So this is, that particular phase is absolutely, was a little bit shorter. Now, I'm not sure if the other phases after that are going to be shorter as well, but it will be absolutely interesting to see play out. But for sure, this accumulation phase went by quicker. Again, I wasn't expecting till June, July, August, but it happened in May. So I was a little bit off by a couple of months there, but you know, I figured it was absolutely going to be summer. And so it just came a little bit about a month or two earlier than what everybody thought. And this is what we're seeing, is this particular cycle a little bit earlier. Now, when it comes to technical analysis, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding, unfortunately, with people with this. People tend to think that it's a crystal ball, and people they're even starting to get angry at people that do technical analysis, because sometimes we predict that price is going to go lower, right? So you have to understand that the only people that are upset about technical analysis or really upset about people using it is the people that just don't get it and don't understand, and people that hold these big bags, these large amounts of assets, that don't want you saying that it's going to go down, right? So it's very self-motivated, self-driven. But essentially, that is the nature of technical analysis. So, you know, all it really is, technical analysis, is simply, like you say, the measure of human psychology. It is simply a measure of sentiment. It's literally what you're thinking translated to a chart so that everybody can see. So when everybody's thinking that the price is thinking that Bitcoin is just going to go, we see the price fly up way too high. But then, of course, we see the price fly down way too low. So it's just this market psychology playing out. And it's been used for many, many centuries now. When people used to be writing this stuff out on paper. But essentially, if you have millions or even billions of dollars of assets from other people underneath you that you are managing, you are absolutely going to try to mitigate risk as much as possible. And this is what we've seen people do for centuries now. We've seen people try to attempt to create technical analysis. Now, technical analysis is, in my opinion, tries to predict based on previous performance. So it's, again, not trying to be a crystal ball. We're just trying to get ranges. So if you notice, real technical analysis real TA traders, they will give you ranges of prices. So they'll say, 60% chance this, 40% chance this price, 30% chance, because this is what they're actually calculating. Because TA doesn't actually give you an exact price. It gives you a range, or a set of variables to try to make a best case guess scenario on. So, it's a little bit sad to see some of these people kind of, attack some of these people who do TA. But at the end of the day, guys, analysts are going to analyze. This is, again, a trade that's been around for many, many centuries, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. And there's only going to be more, if not more TA, as technology and software continues to advance, and we can continue to maybe even start using AI on top of these TA indicators. It's going to get even more crazier. Now, where people can really start to take issue with this, I think, and I would agree, is when people start to manipulate the actual financial infrastructure itself. So these high frequency traders, right, that literally front run the entirety of Wall Street by a few milliseconds, that kind of stuff, obviously that's not cool. But technical analysis, just in general, again, is very, very benign, very, very simple, and has been around for many, many centuries, and will be continued to use for many centuries to come.
Vortex, what a powerful interview, and what a timely interview. If you would, to kind of sum up what you said earlier in this interview, with what you expect in Bitcoin here in 2019, and then what you're expecting in 2020. And then following that, of course, please let people know where they can go to find you and the work you're doing and all the content that you're putting out.
For sure. So where we are in the market right now is, again, we're about to hit this the sideways phase. And so this happens before the parabolic phase. And so we are absolutely going to go sideways now up until, you know, bouncing between 5 and 10K this year. And then next year we can really start building these new bases, these new forms that we can, these new launch pads that we can then continuously launch and launch up. And then again, once we pass new all-time highs, well, then all the retail investors start coming in, and then pretty much everybody, right, will start helping to create the FOMO. But until then, we have to correct at some point from this kind of this big run up, the spring or the summer, I guess, we could say, because, you know, nothing goes straight up forever. So we will have to have a correction, and I fully anticipate that to be around the 9-10K mark before we can start correcting. So this year, it's just going to be beautiful. And, you know, bouncing between 5 and 10K, a lot, very choppy. But next year we start building the launch pads and going to stair step. Next year, we start building those stairs to stair step up. And when will those stairs lead to another parabolic blow off? Is anybody's guess. It could be fall of 2020, could be fall of 2021, but it's absolutely coming soon. So that's really what I see this year. I see Lightning Network continuously taking off. They're going to be having the limits removed from the network and kind of going full 1.0, full live launch next year. And so I fully see that the knee of the S-curve for Lightning starting to take off, happened around 2021, 2022. That's going to bring a huge amount of retail adoption and merchant adoption back into Bitcoin. It's going to be huge. But people need to understand too that the merchant adoption is not so important when it comes to the brick and mortar. It's mostly the digital, because this is a digital money. So that is where it's going to go to first. You know, if you were to picture it as water falling down, you know, it would settle very much in the online space first before it goes to the physical space. But of course, it will touch the physical space. Money touches everything, and Bitcoin is the best form of money we've ever had. So I just see increasing hardware wallet support across the space. I see increasing proposals for Bitcoin, including this brand new awesome Taproot Schnorr proposal, which is probably one of the most important upgrades to Bitcoin since SegWit. We see all this news coming out of the blockchain week this week. We see HTC making a phone capable of running a full node specifically for crypto people and crypto enthusiasts. Microsoft using Bitcoin for their new identity system. You know, again, Lightning, just over 36,000 channels. We see the entire ecosystem sort of coalescing around the Bitcoin Lightning network stack at this point. So that's the next step before we can then have just millions of application developers start building stuff on top of that. So this is all coming. This will play out over decades, of course, but these next few years are going to be absolutely exciting. Very, very, very exciting. It is the beginning years that always, of course, is the most exciting of anything. And this is where we find ourselves now.
Wow. Well, we'll be telling I've said this before in 2017, 2018, we'll be telling our kids and, you know, our grandchildren about these times, these early stages here in cryptocurrency, because by then it'll be mainstream. It'll be a gold standard. There isn't going to be this volatility, if you will, in the US dollar price action. It's going to be a little more of a stable safe haven. I mean, that's at least where I believe it's going. Now it's a safe haven, but it's a roller coaster ride, you know, and trending higher and higher and higher. So man, thanks so much for coming on Crush the Street once again with me today and for this timely interview. Vortex, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it so much, man. It's really, really important to get this information out to the audience early, as it is early days, and it's going to absolutely be exciting the next couple of years. So I hope that your audience is in for a big bumpy ride.
Couldn't agree more.